This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Chef Kiki Luya has had a hand in some of the brightest spots on Detroit's food map. She co-founded Folk Cafe and Market in Detroit and The Farmer's Hand in Corktown. In addition, she's a writer, a food activist, and a restaurant consultant who's been active in movements to eliminate tips in favor of living wages for servers and kitchen staff, and a range of more equitable practices throughout the back of the house. Luya just finished a stint on season 18 of the competitive reality cooking show Top Chef. And as viewers now know, Kiki's run came to an end in episode 4 with a truly odd challenge involving outdoor cooking. And we are not talking about a grill. She's with us today to tell all. Kiki Luya, hi there.
Hello.
So, Kiki, you're a Detroit native.
I am.
Yeah, and I think your family's Congolese, right?
My dad's side of the family, he's from the Congo. My mom was American-born.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about the home cooking that you grew up with.
Yeah, so, early on in life, my dad used to make a lot of food from, you know, his native country. The really interesting part of that is, when he first moved here, he couldn't find the same ingredients. So he had to kind of use his imagination. So a lot of things were kind of like his interpretation of Congolese cuisine, just using things like, you know, cream of wheat instead of, fufu and that kind of thing. So, he adapted. And my mom is actually originally from the American South. So a lot of the food that she grew up with that was very comforting to her, meatloaf and mashed potatoes, grits and that kind of thing, we would have a lot too, especially when visiting my grandmother, who was one of my first, I think, real culinary influences.
Sure. What were some of the ways that your formative food experiences as a young person informed the kind of food and the kind of you wanted to create and the kind of stories you wanted to tell?
Yeah. So I always remember, as a family, it was really important for us to all sit down together. And, you know, no matter kind of how busy we were, and there were a lot of, things that we went through as a family that, created other kind of dynamics where maybe eating together on a dining room table wouldn't necessarily be feasible, but we always made time for it. And because of that, I really do equate eating together and my own culinary philosophy with gathering and connecting with people. And I think about that every time I sit down to a meal as being really intentional about it. That's really how I want my food to feel, is I want people to feel maybe a little sense of nostalgia. There's something maybe that they recognize, something that's comforting to them in that food. It's always really fresh. But at the same time, it is kind of my way of showing people that I love them. And I think that I do that, whether I'm cooking in a restaurant establishment or whether I'm just cooking, for my husband or some friends of mine. I really think that food is about connecting, and it very much can be about showing someone that you care for them. And that's what I want my food to come across for other people.
Yeah, this won't come as a surprise to anyone who had the pleasure of visiting Folk Cafe and The Farmer's Hand, the two spaces that you were involved with in Detroit, mm-hmm. out of a partnership with Rahani Folks and ultimately later with two other chefs. There was another space called Mink that opened where Farmer's Hand used to be. Can you tell me what you found most rewarding about working on those spaces?
Oh, sure. Corktown as a community, and me being, a native Detroiter, it was always a space that I felt very welcome in. And when we decided to open our businesses in Corktown, Corktown is a really tight-knit community. And it's one of those interesting communities in Detroit because its proximity to downtown. You have a lot of people who, are kind of working downtown, maybe young professionals, and they want to find, a place close to their work where they can live. And so Corktown is a very natural, option for them. And because of that, you have this kind of like old Corktown and new Corktown, and you have all of this like rich, rich, rich history. And so I felt like it was a great community to be a part of. And I think the most rewarding thing was that we really were welcomed with open arms. And that was something that I didn't really expect. I don't know why. I just think, you start a business and you feel so siloed with what you're doing. And A lot of times you just put your head down and continue the work, but people were really thrilled when we opened our doors. And I will never forget the first day that we opened the Farmer's Hand, we had a line out the door. It was raining outside and people were so excited to walk in and to welcome us into the neighborhood that I just felt like that was really the true spirit of Detroit, right? Is that, you know, big or small, it's like, we're really happy you're here and we're really committed to your success and we want to support you any way we can. And I think that also we had a mechanism at all of the spaces really for community feedback where we wanted to listen to what customers wanted, whether it be grocery items or food on the plate. And so, you know, that to me, that's kind of what I want for any establishment that I'm a part of, is I don't want to just kind of beat into people's heads what I want as a chef, what I think that they should be eating. But I want it to be more of this like conversation with the neighborhood. How can we support each other, right? Because food essentially, it fills you know, a place in everybody's lives in a very meaningful way. But in the same time, as food establishments, we can also, you know, have that reciprocal relationship with the communities that we exist within. So I'd say that is pretty up there for me.
The Farmer's Hand was a market with sandwiches and coffee, and Folk is an intimate space serving breakfast and lunch. It's a great favorite of the brunch crowd. At the same time, the restaurants were speaking out on wages and product sourcing and other issues that were important to you in a period when Detroit's food scene was getting a lot of attention. I wanted to ask how you felt about the big influx of customers in town at that time and talent in town, and whether it made it, do you think it made it easier or harder to accomplish the things that you wanted to do?
You know, I'm not sure I have a linear answer for that, because I think on the one hand, maybe because there was such an influx of new restaurants and new chefs coming in, maybe diners were a little bit more adventurous, potentially. But also, you know, that I would just consider to be adventurous with their eating, right? Wanting to try new places. I think that when it comes to the activism and the advocacy work that I was doing within all of the spaces, that, you know, Folk and the Farmer's Hand especially, I don't know that the influx of people coming in had any real impact on that, aside from just making it very clear that from the beginning we had to be it was a conversation with diners, right? I think especially when we decided to forego tipping at Folk, that was a huge conversation. And, you know, it wasn't always well received. And I didn't expect it to be either. And I don't think that that had anything to do with new diners coming in or, you know, old diners or anything like that. I think it was just a matter of like, that was something that was fairly new to Detroit and maybe even to Michigan at the time, where a lot of restaurants were not doing that. I think across the country, yes, people were kind of dipping their toe into that. But here it was, you know, it was almost like this teaching moment where we had to really explain, if people were willing to listen, the why behind it. And, you know, we could go on our soapbox for hours and hours and talk about it. But how do you do that when you're, you know, you're taking someone's order and you need to do it fairly quickly and they only have a certain amount of time? So it also became a teaching moment, I think, for me as well. And, you know, of course, the more diners that come in, the more conversations we can have. And I think that that really is what moves the needle on all of those issues. So, you know, there was a positive, I think, if I kind of look at the whole situation in terms of, you know, the more people, the more diners, the more chefs, the more restaurants, the more opportunity we have, I think, to really make some real change in the industry.
Can you say anything about why you decided to step away in 2020?
Sure. You know, I think that the long and short of it is just that sometimes partnerships run their course. And I know that that's a very PC way of saying it, but it's entirely true. I think that, you know, and this goes for any partnership, really, you know, the lucky ones kind of can stick around for a very long time. But sometimes people just kind of go in different directions in terms of where they want to take the business or they want to take their career. And for me, it was very much that. It was where I wanted to go in my career and where I wanted the businesses to go and how I wanted us to interface with the community were just not jiving with, you know, our partners and also with Rohani. So you know, it was time to step away. And, you know, I think for me, I'd known that for quite some time, and I wanted to make sure that it was the right decision. And ultimately I did. So, you know, things just sometimes go their separate ways.
It's crazy that all that was going down in the middle of the pandemic.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed it was. Timing was, I don't know, it couldn't have been stranger. I'll put it that way.
And just to add another level of strange, you've just wrapped up your time as a contestant on Bravo's Top Chef.
What's looking good, Keeks?
I'm going to do a scallop ceviche.
Yummy.
I've never made raw scallops.
Today's the day.
But you know what? I never made raw chicken either, so, you know.
So there's a first time for everything.
I really should have picked tuna. That's my favorite application. But this is my raw redemption. I want that win.
They recruited you, didn't they?
Yes, they did. I had a casting agent reach out to me, and it was interestingly enough around the time that I was going through the separation from Folk in the Farmer's Hand. So that was a little serendipitous in a lot of ways. But they did. It was a breath of fresh air.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Kiki Luya, a chef, writer, and food activist, also a restaurant consultant. She co-founded Folk Cafe and Market in Detroit and The Farmer's Hand in Corktown. Okay, I have to ask, one thing that I always wonder when I'm watching food shows, and especially competition-style cooking shows, the restaurant business is such a high-wire act. Anyone who's ever worked in a kitchen or the service industry can tell you that. How can anything that is produced as a show in that way match the stress of a commercial kitchen?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. It actually sometimes can be even more stressful in the Top Chef environment. And I mean that because at the very least in a commercial kitchen, while, you know, you might have fires to put out on a daily basis, for the most part, there's a control that you have. You have control of the product that you've ordered. You have a control of the equipment that you have, a control of the environment. So, especially when you're kind of in a management or ownership position, there's a lot that you can expect on a day-to-day basis. The difference is that, and of course, you know, it's very stressful. Obviously, restaurant work can be very, very stressful, and you have good days and bad days. But, you know, I don't think that, well, I thought at first, I should say, that that experience would prepare me really well for Top Chef. And I think in a lot of ways, of course, it does. Top Chef is a very different experience in that everything is out of your control, everything. And so you really, quite literally, and so you really have to be so adaptable, because at any given moment, rules are going to change, right? What the actual challenge is going to change. The ingredients that you were expecting, the dish that you were planning in your head overnight, that will change because you don't have access to those ingredients. You might not get the protein you want. Equipment might fail, right? You might be cooking outdoors. It's raining. All of those things are elements that from day to day, obviously, you know, as the competition goes along, produces even more stress because, you know, as a person who's very used to being in control and really likes that control, it took a little bit of getting used to, for sure. But that's also the nature of the competition, right? That's the game itself. It's like, how adaptable can you be, and how resilient can you be, as things are forever changing around you?
Yeah. You had some early wins. Eventually, though, the factor that came down in your elimination was an unfortunate incident with outdoor frying. I can't think of anything less likely to come up in restaurant experiences. You can't feel that bad about that, can you?
I know. It's, it was one of those things where, you know, you replay it in your head and you just think about all the things that you can do. And there are some things that, you know, now that I think about it, I'm like, you know what I should have done? I should have fried it ahead of time almost to temp and then flashed it right before I put it on the plate. That's what I would have done probably in a restaurant, right? Or at the very least, I would have had fryers that worked at a restaurant and that I can control, you know, and not of the elements. But, I do remember that day when my elimination went down and I learned that I, you know, had served raw chicken. It was kind of like, like, are you serious? Did I? Oh my gosh. And then also how? And you kind of, you're racking your brain. But ultimately, I remember leaving that challenge and almost every challenge. And, you know, as they kind of went along, you get more tired, things happen, you know, you get out of your game. And you know, I think the people who are really successful in the competition are the ones that can pick themselves right back up, even after maybe they were in the bottom, and bring it right back to the top. And, you know, it's a difficult thing to do. But for me, I remember thinking, okay, I did my best, right? I did my best that day. And if my best was that I couldn't fry chicken to temp outdoors in a fryer that was temperamental, that's what it was. And, you know, as long as I gave it my all, I can feel really good in that. And next time, just really, really check that chicken, and also just think a little bit through it, right? You kind of get a clarity after you've been out of the competition for a little bit of what would I have done, and that's it. Like, how can I find that clarity in the moment? I think that's really, really important to the competition.
Just as a brief aside, I lived in Portland for 16 years, and I'm so sorry that you experienced Portland in the manner that you did, in like the worst wildfire season ever, because it's a fantastic place to eat and to hang out with food people.
Thank you. You know, I really appreciate that. It was, I too kind of felt like, oh, you know, this is not the right time. And that was my first time to really, you know, be in Portland and visit it. But thankfully, you know, there are two chefs on the show who are from Portland, and we've connected, and I plan to go back summer/fall and do some foraging, you know, go to some restaurants and really just see the city, which is beautiful. You know, it really is quite an amazing city. And I just think that it's time to go back and really get the lay of the land a little bit more than I was able to before, for sure.
Yeah. Kiki, we've got less than a minute. I know you have to run, but what's your next move?
Great question. So, you know, I'll throw a teaser out here. While I can't give specifics, I'm definitely not done with restaurant work. You know, I think that there's concepts that are in my head that have always been in my head that I really want to, you know, take a go at one day soon. So that is something that I'm absolutely working on. And then I'm also really fortunate that my advocacy work has continued. And so I feel really fortunate to have landed there.
Kiki Luya, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.